So, everybody get their coffee or whatever it was that they needed? Looks like Grace is still doing some work or something. And what I wanted to do, and I don't know whether, let me see if I can do this. Sandy and Anne, okay. So one little fun thing that, here we go. And I'm going to share a screen with you. And this has just got everybody, when I get my, come back, find my Zoom, where am I? So I'm going to share my screen for a sort of a fun little thing. This is just a web page thing. But so we've got everybody who was signed up for this program in here. Now, in theory, I'd have some prizes for everybody. I have to figure out what they might be. And it might be just a pat on the back, or I can send you and I don't know. But anyway, you have to be here to win. And I'm gonna do these occasionally throughout the time. And if you're here when I do them, and they'll be randomly, then I will take your name and I will think of a prize later on, but I haven't figured it out yet. So even the prizes are gonna be surprises. Okay, so the way it works is I spin this. Now, Anne is the person in Australia. We have a winner, but she's not here. So I still might have to, anyway, I actually do have a prize for Anne. She was the first winner. But I knew she wasn't going to be here. So I knew she had a hard time. So I gave her anyway. So now, I'm just going to leave the names in here. So sometimes we might have to spin a couple of times to find somebody who's actually in the room to get a real, real winner. Yay, Daniela! I know you're in the room. You got a prize. I have no idea what it is. I'll figure it out. So there you go. Congratulations, Daniela. You are the proud winner of who knows what or who knows when, but I have your name down and you won. So there you go. So thank you for coming back and joining us here. Yeah. So I guess your 15 minutes was for your lunch, Grace. I forgot. Yeah, it gets a little confusing about all of this stuff. Okay, so where are we? I got to figure out where I am with my... So here we are. Cup of coffee, lunch or dinner. Me trying to figure out what I'm doing here. Okay, so where we are, we were dealing with journeys, life's journeys. And I think if you recall those who are in the impact and influence formula, you remember that pretty much we started with a discussion of stakeholder journeys. For those who are working in the areas of social impact, and we went over a number of aspects of this. We looked at it from the point of view of looking at what is a successful organization, or what does it mean to be successful as a social entrepreneur, as a social enterprise that might be nonprofit, that might be for profit, that might be you know, structured in any way. It could be an organization that isn't properly incorporated. It could just be a local community of people that are working on something together. But still, people don't want to do things, don't want to be a failure, that's just natural. So what constitutes a successful enterprise? And one of the things that we looked at was, of course, things like, well, today, you know, a lot of the success in the world is measured by, you know, how many gold chains you've got on, or what kind of a car you drive, what kind of income you've got. In other words, it all comes down to, you know, the dollars. But for social change, for having an impact in the world, improving people's lives, upgrading, you know, taking care of people's hearts and souls, it's not quite as clear how to measure what is successful. Now, some have gone about doing this a number of ways, but when you get to the organizational structure, there are ways to differentiate and to show that there are both qualitative and quantitative measures. And it's all the more important that we take into consideration those qualitative measurements, so to speak, when we're looking at social change. And so we looked at like level 5 leadership, and I'm not going to go into that specifically here, but what that means is, you know, a lot of corporate leaders really are more like level 4 leaders who are able to run their organizational mechanisms and make sure that out the bottom of that organization comes a good pot of money for their stakeholders, i.e., you know, the shareholders, the employees, and the finances that the company needs to be successful, and showing up with a big bottom line is pretty clear. For those who are working in social change, there's another level of success. And often that's also part of the challenge for people working in politics, who are, in theory, there for the public good. Not always, but in theory, they're there for the public good. So at the moment, we'll look at those leaders as level 5 leaders who are often not, they don't have command and control like the military or like corporations. Corporations were built more on the military model. And so they can't, the CEO doesn't have the almighty, you know, mandate, and he can hire and fire anybody or whatever. But when you're in political leadership, at least in democratic countries, at least in theory, the top level leaders have to win the hearts and souls of people. They have to be able to, work collaboratively with other groups of people, with other nations, with other organizations, with other subgroups. So, but all of this is geared towards a mission, a particular mission. So each one of you, when you enter into some kind of an organization or a social project of some kind, there's usually, hopefully, a clear and stated mission for that organization or for that particular effort or for that particular program. And while you are engaged in that, then that leadership is responsible beyond their own levels of comfort and success, so to speak. That they're responsible to the mission of the organization, to the mission of the country, to the mission of the public service, to the mission of the project. So there is that concept of level 5 leadership that is different for social organizations than many of the corporate organizations. So there is that aspect in there. But coming back to and building on the fact that when you work in social organizations for social change, you might be working, for example, FUNMI works with the women and the families and the children of those who live in this floating slum. But there are other stakeholders. There are husbands and families. There are those who are helping provide some of the training to the women. She has a board of people who are helping her with her organization. She has those who are working in the organization. There are volunteers and there are employees. It may only be one employee, a couple employees. The numbers are a kind of secondary to the fact that there are stakeholders and multiple stakeholders. And so when you're involved in social change, and also, sorry, it's important to note here also in her community, there are traditional leaders and who are the ones who are kind of either intentionally or otherwise or effectively the keepers of the status quo of the environment within which she works. And the same is true for almost anybody, no matter whether you work, you know, I know Daniela's helping with the domestic violence summit at the moment. The stakeholders there are multiple in that group. You've got people who are concerned about the UN, the people who are concerned about the victims of domestic violence. There are those who work with other civil society organizations within the organization who have varying levels of interest specifically in the area of domestic violence. But then there are people who deal with children and children's rights. There are those who deal with women and women's rights. There are people who deal with LGBT issues. There are those who deal with disabilities issues. So always when you work, move into and into the environment of social change, there's a much larger mosaic of stakeholders that are involved. Because usually when we want to change something, that means at some stage or another, we're going to bump up against these groups one way or another. And even when the different groups statedly say, we know there needs to be change, the realities of change can be challenging. So it's also why, and this is not to say, therefore we don't do anything, of course not. It's all the more reason that arbitrary action is going to probably take a lot of energy and dissipate that very precious, those precious energy and resources that people have. So we do have to be focused and we do have to have a plan. Now, I think the summit project that Daniela is working on is a little bit more targeted and focused and constrained. And so that's a little bit different than, for example, the one that FUNMI is working on, where she is virtually living and breathing daily with the women, the children, the husbands, the community, the local government, the funders, the board members who are supporting her and who she's hoping in time to multiply, you know, scale her work and do this not just in that area but in other areas as well. And the same thing for Ifani, who's working in a number of ways and very active with his people and groups. But it's also why we have to, number one, we need to be aware that all of these stakeholders play a role. We do need to be clear about who they are and in terms of our energy and resources, in terms of understanding the impact that people have, it's important to identify the priorities of impact on your particular work. And for different aspects of your work, some stakeholders may be more important, and for other aspects, other stakeholders are more important. But again, part of this is, number one, don't just know that they're there. Factor them into your planning and your thinking and your working. Now, that's easy for me to say, factor them in. Well, what do I mean by that? Can I give you any tools for that? How do you do that? And the most powerful tool that I have found kind of help, it's been a merger of it's evolved. And that is what I've called the stakeholder driver template. Just for a moment, I want to share with you again, to going back to just reminding you of is that big enough that way, Daniela? Yeah. So the stakeholder journey, as you engage people, you know, most stakeholders, when you as an individual first approach somebody about a project, or even first approach somebody about your organization, for example, they don't ignore the challenge, or maybe it is a challenge, don't ignore it, but part of the, you could just say the challenge there is not knowing. There's always beginning, it begins with some kind of a challenge, you could say. And that is for those, when you first engage them, is they don't know you. You knock on their door, and who are you? Unless, of course, you have some notoriety already, but that doesn't always happen. So in terms of getting them on board, one of the first things that you need to figure out, other than introducing what you're doing and letting people know, is understanding what to them are some of their biggest challenges. Because in the end, unless you're able to get into their shoes, to understand what they feel are their biggest challenges and problems, or are a significant challenge and problem for them that they want solved, you have to understand their challenges. Now, years ago, when I first started training NGO representatives to the United Nations about how to make an impact, how to get out there and develop relationships with diplomats. Because actually, strangely enough, so many people in so many non-governmental organizations who have ECOSOC status, that is, you know, affiliation with the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations, they go there feeling, you know, I don't know what the reasons why they first get their ECOSOC status, but so many of them spend all of their time only relating to other non-governmental organizations. And I don't quite get it, but you know, that's what they do. So that's what they do. So part of what I felt was so important was to even introduce to people, well, you know, you can work with the diplomats. You can form working groups of diplomats at the UN. You don't have to just work with other NGOs. In fact, why in the heck did you go to the UN unless you're trying to make relationships with other with governments? Otherwise, you go join a big nonprofit or civil society association of some kind and simply network there. But since you're at the UN, since you're working with in an intergovernmental, or primarily intergovernmental environment, why don't you make relationships with the diplomats? Why don't you go and make them your friends? So one of the very first things you need to do is you need to understand what their needs are. Get into their, you know, sit with them and find out what their needs are, and then if your organization can help them with any part of what their needs are, that's when you have the common ground and the basis to build a relationship to move forward. But you first, and I used to call it the Vienna Cafe conversation. And it was really about sitting with them and finding out what their concerns are. This was always the first challenge, is to find out what their challenges are. The Vienna Cafe is just a place where you can sit and have a cup of coffee. But the point was to have a conversation with people and find out what their challenges are. Don't just sit down and say, hey, my organization is great. I do this, I do that. You know, I'm really wonderful. And can you help me? Have you ever had somebody come up to you and say how great they are and can you help them? And they have no idea who you are, but they just want your help because they know that you can, maybe you haven't, but I have, and it's not an inspiring conversation. Let's put it this way. But so many people who are passionate about their work are so desperate to let everybody else know what they're doing without first finding out if the person that you're speaking to actually feels that they need anything that you've got. Some of this stuff is not rocket science, but our own passion and drive can sometimes, blind us to, the things that, and then if we get into that habit of just saying, yeah, if we feel pushed that we have to get our word out there so desperately, we've got a deadline or something like that, then we can more easily make those kinds of mistakes. We feel like we've only got these precious few minutes with this person, so I've got to let them know what I'm doing. But those precious few minutes need to be spent better some other way. Those precious few minutes are better spent with you getting to understand them and their challenges. Because then you will first start, if you've got a program, a project that really can help them, you'll be certain you can. Plus, the chances are, if you take the time, even just in a few minutes of finding out from them, what are some of their challenges that they're facing right now on that particular issue, all of a sudden, they will be much more interested in you. Because it's part of what builds empathy, genuine. It's again, it's this stuff below the nose, I don't know, somewhere there, I know, but the pre-rational stuff, when we feel that the person is genuinely concerned about us and it's important that we are, then we're far more likely to want to reciprocate. Otherwise, if somebody's coming to you and you're busy thinking about your elevator pitch and unless the situation is set up for that, and there are situations that can be set up for that, and then it's totally appropriate. But in the first meeting with somebody that you really do want to connect with, it's really important not to just elevator pitch them. But to give them that foundation, that heart level, the pre-rational, the subsurface level connections that will last longer than just the encounter, that will have them wanting to know more about you. And when somebody wants to know more about you, that's when you tell them what you're doing. and how then also you also by then have the context within which their concerns are and how what you are doing can apply to them. So there's this personalization process that goes on in that moment as well. So but that first encounter, you know, is right back here at the beginning. And then they begin to see that maybe you do have some kind of solution that can help their issue. But they either, you know, just in the marketplace of ideas that is in the UN, for example, or for many people today in the kind of public marketplace of so many organizations, peoples, and activities that are going out in the world, people recognize that there are various options that they have to deal with those areas of concern. And then it's another step, and this is just looking at kind of the stakeholder journey, and there's an awareness level of this, and then there's the capacity to act on these things, and they're two, in a sense, two aspects of this same journey. But the main point that I just want to go over here and to remind you and to just go into a little bit more of the granular level of what we talked about before of the stakeholder journey is that then each journey is from recognizing or acknowledging or discussing with somebody the challenges, seeing where the connections are, that there are solutions to this, noticing that there are options, but then finally, as far as you're concerned, ideally getting them to make the decision to go with you in particular, even if they've got other, they may have other organizations they're working with too, but why not also work on this aspect of the challenge with you, for example. I'm just thinking of, you know, practical ways of thinking about this. And then going into the level where they have that experience with you, and in their experience with you, they are so amazed by how you deliver such an exceptional experience with them that you become the obvious choice. But behind everything, whether it be awareness development, and then the decision process and the experience process, there is this journey. Is my main point here, and why it's so important that we start well, and that we start with, and I think what is very, very powerful, and I think Ifani has experienced it with the little bits that he's tried out with the stakeholder and, you know, drivers template, and also Grace, to even have just a totally different level of conversation with people that helps you then better understand how you are going to go about doing your work. I mean, it's a co-creation process. That's, to me, is part of what it is you're genuinely engaging with people in this way. So I would like to open this up and ask both Grace and Ifani, if you can just give, you know, even just a short experience, just what you discovered as you did use this, and then I can make that available for the others who are not here, that template, that stakeholder drivers template, which again, that endeavor was to get into and understand some of those elements that I that taps into those three drivers, the L1, L2, L3, the fears, the concerns, the pre-rational drivers of us as human beings, and not just our logical thinking about what our problem is, and tapping into those so that as we move forward, We're including those concerns in our programs, solutions, etc. So I, you know, Ifanye, or just unmute yourself and then take it away.
Well, if I, good afternoon, if I did get you correctly, the experience have been great. I think utilized that again 2 days ago with a, with a potential board member. We had kind of lost track 2 months ago, but reconnected. And yesterday, a presumably 30 minutes conversation went almost 2 hours.
Wow.
So it was really an eye-opener to see how such a tool could unpack so much that it would affect some kind of collaboration. So getting to know exactly what the stakeholder does, what their challenges are, and also where we could work with them to leverage on their skills and on the skill sets that we also have. And also it went into what they would now do to enhance the program that we're doing after sharing with them what we're doing and also what they were doing. We unpacked a whole lot of things. A whole lot of things where now they took on some assignments which they were going to do. And those were not assignments that I actually gave, but they took on to get counselors, mentors, and also gynecologists who would be on board so that when we have certain women who have physical issues, we'll be able to send them to those gynecologists who will now do the evaluation and report back. So it just went from one thing to a wonderful 2 hours thing. And there's somebody that is probably hard to get. Now it's like the interest of meeting on a regular basis just developed because we could see similarities between the programs and how they can actually integrate. And, you know, be well developed and assimilated by all parties. So it was just amazing. I was like, wow, something that we've been trying to put together for 2 months because she's not, you know, we'll have a conversation 10 minutes. She's rushing to something else and everything. She's a professor of medicine. And, but yesterday was like, wow. So this is actually what's on board. And also gave me an opportunity to share with them the milestones that we have reached and accomplished. Well, for example, the safe haven, letting her know that, okay, we've secured the land, is being cleared. And she was like, wow. And that kind of opened a whole lot of things. So you could see sharing a few things. And like you said, also having to give ear to what someone else is doing, look at the challenges they are facing, and maybe also offer some kind of idea, maybe, you know, their empathy to say, okay, yeah, when this together could open a whole lot of things and begin to draw and build that bridge and also relationship between you and the person. So I did experience that yesterday. It was just cool.
Well, I'm so, you can't believe how thrilled I am to hear that kind of outcome. As you say, I think that seemingly simple tool just helps, as you, and you, your words were unpack. It just allowed, it just unleashed the human element of compassion and hope and aspiration and that comes through that kind of engagement. That's thrilling, wonderful, Ifan. Yeah, as you say, sometimes just the tiniest little, but the right thing at the right place, the right time can do amazing, amazing things. Fantastic. I'm thrilled to hear. And Grace, you've had some very different experiences, but also let us hear.
I did it, and I focused it on our internship and volunteer program. So I was interviewing current and former interns and volunteers. I haven't been able to really yet compile and really process all of it yet and systematize it and see the trends. As Karen kind of suggests, it's best to kind of even put it in a spreadsheet form or some way to really see the patterns. But what it did spark was there's several ideas of things that I would have never considered mm-hmm. that were brought up in terms of new projects and ways in which actually, one of the things that was coming up from a lot of interns was they wanted more clarity on what they would be doing. And so even the projects that were coming up became ideas that could be an internship in it of itself. And so kind of snowballing off of each other in that way, but also just relationally, it really opened up the lines of communication between our office and the interns and the volunteers, because we have three, I work in the UN office, obviously, in New York, and we have three UN offices, one in New York, one in Geneva, and one in Vienna. And just like the United Nations, it's easy to work in silos. And so by doing this project, I included the interns and volunteers that have engaged with the other two offices. And it's really already started to facilitate conversations and collaborations on just a relational level, which has been great. And yeah.
So, and that's the thing, is it's making the effort, the outreach, and by the doing of it has its own impact in addition to the content of what goes on. So taking this kind of initiative, making that effort with your different stakeholders, and you can see, I think, if you did a project, you could frame it as a project to find out from a particular stakeholder group about their concerns, how your organization could really help or serve them, or what that group could do more for you, depending on the nature of the stakeholder group, whether they're donors or whether they're board members or whatever. But by taking the time with each of those different groupings, but of course you start with your most critical, your most strategic, or the ones that are most pertinent to you at the time. But when you make that effort to reach out into that stakeholder grouping, then you do develop that clarity about how to bring them along that journey, not just in terms of informing them and training them on what they need to know, but bringing them along that journey from being interested and kind of supportive of you to the point where they become totally committed. Now, what happened with Efanye is he kind of went in one that kind of conversation facilitated, a quantum leap from the challenge to the committed in one move. And it shows a lot of people are there ready to, they're ready to help when they can. But they often need a reason to. They've got to be proven. We're all human. We need to trust. We need to feel heard. We need to, it's relationships. It's real live relationships. Sometimes it's as simple as leaning into somebody when they say something and saying, "Tell me more." It's just being human. But we so often in our fast-paced life, culprit here half the time. We're so busy moving on to the next thing that we forget a little bit about our own humanity and what is meaningful in our lives and how that can leverage and massively improve even our greatest work-related aspirations. So I'm really happy to hear of those experiences. So I'm just going to go over really quickly for Daniela and Fernanda, and I think Marilyn also hasn't seen this, I don't think. But just very quickly show you, just so go over this. Let me see if I can find it. Share my screen. Here we go. So this is really just a template that is created that is meant to be adapted according to whatever situation, but it gives you the core elements as how to, as I say, uncover the stakeholder drivers. And that goes back to that, what I called the drivers of the L1, L2, L3. It is just a practical way of helping us connect logically, emotionally, and even at the very visceral level with our stakeholders. It helps develop relationships, it helps us understand better, and it allows discussions that usually will not take place, you know, when, hi, how are you, what's my name, your name, you know, we exchange our business cards, or we haven't seen one another for a long time, or whatever it might be. The very simple, superficial banter that usually goes on in, you know, until you trust and know somebody. But as Ifani said, it helps unpack a lot of stuff in a very natural and meaningful way. And so you just simply start with, I'm going to ask you 10 questions, or you can cut it down or whatever. But some of the core elements are in the beginning, and then you tailor it according to what you really are, you know, your objective here, your genuine work need with those people. So you have to, of course, create the context, you know, what are you doing? You know, sometimes you get onto a meeting with them and you know very little about them. So you have to get some context of who they are. Sometimes you start off with somebody you don't even know, and you ask them to, you know, would they be open to some kind of research if they're, I'm sure you didn't know all of the interns, Grace, when you were doing your, you might have met them or heard their names, but you didn't necessarily know them. And even there, what are they doing? So what are they doing in their life? Yeah, they might be an intern, but what are they studying? What are they, you know? So you find out a little bit about what they are, and in the and then to give it context for what you're speaking about, so that they're not answering everything about their life, you have to constrain it a little bit by their, you know, by their stakeholder duties. You need to make that connection with what it is, understanding what they're doing. But then you say, okay, so, you know, in relation to the UN, for example, or relation to helping women and girls in times of COVID, or whatever it might be, you get to understand what their situation. And so you help them, then you go on into the discussion. And this process is really initiated by a real listening, you know, and the questions are asked, and one of the things that makes it a very pleasant process is you're there to listen and to hear. And it seemed like Ifania's meeting rolled on into another meeting at the end of his after he got into this, but bottom line, as you do this kind of a interview and research with a person, what you're doing is you're just hearing from them. You're hearing from them. And so it's just very simple. When it comes to being interning, when you're an intern, what are your biggest challenges? What are the biggest challenges that you face? And then you stop and you listen. You allow them to think, and then you can say, they might come up with something, and then you say, is there anything else? And then sometimes they dig down even further. Some people will come up with a huge laundry list of stuff. Some people will say something and then they'll be quiet. But and then those cases, it's good to say, is there anything else? Because then they sometimes have to take the time, just it not only usually takes a moment, but it's important to give them the time in that moment to really think, is there anything else? Well, yes. Because also sometimes, based on even answering that first question, now there's a little bit more trust, so they'll dig a little deeper. And one of the things that I usually do when I interview people, I also make it clear that this information is just for me. I'm just gathering, I'm utilizing it. It will not be shared, you know, any further than me for this research purpose. And just again, so that you're creating that safe space, and then you have to honor that, of course. And sometimes, most of the time, the information is not going to be hidden, private, or anything that shouldn't be told, but still people are telling you things that they often, probably, don't speak with anybody else, because most people don't ask them. So it is, it can be a little bit challenging for them. And then you move on and look at it, the same issue in a sense from a slightly different perspective. So when it comes to being an intern, you know, what are some of your deepest concerns or the biggest fears that you face? Now, maybe some people don't think that they've got many fears dealing with internships, but maybe they are concerned about wasting their time, or that they don't have enough I don't know. It could be more of a time concern, or maybe they're a little bit afraid of going into the UN and dealing with all of these people. You know, we don't know, but until you ask them, we don't know. Because each of our concerns and fears in a given situation are going to be different than theirs. Even my concerns in a given situation today are radically different than in that same situation 20 years ago. So we all journey, we all travel, we all change. And so now at the moment, and taking the time to allow a person to think, well, what am I dealing with? And sometimes individuals haven't even thought themselves about, well, what am I concerned about? What am I afraid of? And having just even taking those moments for them to reflect on their own inner world can be revealing to themselves. So this process alone can be valuable to the individual beyond being valuable to you. And that's why it's important that we honor and respect these relationships. And then you continue on, and then you can say, and so is there anything else? And you pause and allow them to either break the silence with another idea, or no, I think that's it. And even if there is something else that they're not sharing, they've come to the realization that there's something else and that they're not quite prepared to share it at the moment. That is a level of awareness in their journey in life that is valuable to them. So again, this whole process, and that's why I called it a co-creating of solutions. Yeah, it may not, you know, the sum of what that person did not say in that moment may not be helping you figure out what to do in the internship, for example, and I'm just using this as an example at the moment. But it is helping them, you know, even maybe when you get to the next question, and maybe something else might come out when you ask, what are the biggest frustrations that you deal with in your organization or your stakeholder duties or whatever it is. And I often add that, you know, frustrations are often the things that you feel like shouldn't be happening, but are happening. So it's just a way to help people think about some other aspects that can shine a light on the challenges that they're facing, and therefore the opportunities for action. Because every problem is really just an opportunity for us to find a way to resolve something that's not working as well as it might. And that is change leadership. So that's what we're trying to do. And then to get their perspective, to continue on, to get their perspective, what do you want to learn about? Because sometimes people want to do it, but then they also realize they don't have all of the resources that they need to do a good job. Or they can see things they need to learn that we're not seeing that they need to learn. It's insightful. So what do you want to learn in order to do that better? So, you know, very clearly when you're dealing with, for example, board members, it's an historic problem for boards. You get organizations who say, okay, we need to have a board. We need to have people who people know, or they're an expert in their area, people that are recognizable in your specific field. And it might be women's issues, or it could be cybersecurity. And so you want to bring somebody on who's a known name. And some of you might not need to form a board yet, but this will be good information for you down the road. But just because they're an expert in their field does not mean they know how to be a good board member. And so it's really important to help people understand. So right there, you know, they can say, well, I'm not sure what I'm meant to be doing. I'm not sure how, what my responsibilities are or what you're wanting from me. I'm happy to help out where I can. And if somebody says I'm happy to help out where I can, that's probably a code word of saying, but I don't know what you really want or how to really help you. So right there, you're beginning to see, okay, board education is needed. That is just about it's an ongoing thing, because as you get new board members coming on and board members going off, as you get new interns coming in and interns going out, you know, there are things that even just help them understand the context that they're moving into, the environment that they're moving into, whether it be orientation. So there's usually onboarding or orientation that is needed. And if you don't have those things in place, then it's good to get them in place. And even when you get them in place, there's ways to refine them. And then even as your board changes, you'll also then decide, and as your organization changes, then there are also slightly different things that you want the board members to focus on, for example. So asking them, what do you want to learn, can help shine some light on some of the things that, as you know, as Grace was saying just before, it helped her see things that she just didn't notice. And that's the point of this. And the point of it is co-creation. And when we co-create, and that's one of the biggest problems in the whole big development, history of development in the UN at the international level, you've got foreign aid coming in. There's huge problems with foreign aid coming in to save developing countries or whatever. There's huge benefit as well. And there's huge challenges, because so often there's not this co-creation process that goes on. The people who are being helped are not always included in the process of creating the solutions as much as is needed. And then when the big aid goes away, because they weren't co-creating anything, then any of the benefit has also just plain gone away. Whereas when you co-create with people, when you leave, you've left them with whatever it was that you built together. And then they can bring in others to work with them. So you're not just going in and saving the world and then leaving people to You know, there's somebody that one of my mentors says, you know, it's really important not to have the say, especially in as entrepreneurs and change leaders. Well, he doesn't say change leaders, but anyway, it's really important not to have the savior syndrome. You know, and there are reasons for that. And again, that's part of the reason why I asked Chaplain Marilyn to come in and speak about some things, because understanding where our boundaries are of what we can do and how you know what we can do for, with, and to people. But this co-creation process is really such an important one when we're people who are working to improve the lives of others. And so this is just, again, a very powerful tool that I would recommend you build into and adapt and use and shape in whatever way you can in any work that you do, because the core elements of it are just multifaceted. The benefits are multifaceted. And so again, you going on in, and I'll just continue on. I just want to go spend the time to go through this because I think it's just such a valuable tool for you to have some sense of, to practice using, to get better at using, to adapt and to utilize in your own context, to use it in, you know, and you don't even have to do it formally through an interview, but even just in your conversations with people, you can come to understand some of their concerns. So what do you want to learn in relation? And again, to keep it constrained, otherwise the discussion can go far and wide and you can have other conversations at other times. But again, it's part of what would help you do this better. So it's all about helping them become more effective. And that goes back to, you know, how to become a high impact person. One of the most powerful ways is to help other people become effective in their lives. So here you're saying getting them to think, and sometimes they haven't even thought about, well, what would help me become more effective? You're actually facilitating that thinking in them. And again, you know, they may say some things. Is there anything else? Is there anything else that would be helpful for you to learn? Then this next question is going towards having them express their aspirations, their dreams, their hopes. And so I call it, you know, kind of like Mickey Mouse and the Imagineers down in Disney World. But do this Imagineering task of, you know, if your organization was the best in the world, or if you know, what is your dream? If you were to wake up tomorrow morning and everything about what you are trying to do was fulfilled, what would your day be like? What would you do? And I heard some precious, precious stories from some people when they told me how, you know, they would go to the place where, you know, they had built their orphanage and the children there would gather around and they would walk and they would grab his hand and smile. And then they would all go off and do things together. And I mean, just very, in some ways, very simple and yet very profound things. But to understand what people's dreams and hopes are, their aspirations, is really, it's a gift to hear those dreams and aspirations. And also to then allow them to take that moment to live in that dream and aspiration. And to think about what it would mean for them. What it would mean for them. Because we are meaning makers as human beings, we are meaning makers. And it's really important that we are able to make meaning in our lives. And again, in each of these, you can ask them what else, and see if there is anything else. And when they're ready to move on, they can move on. Then the next question is, again, another angle on all of this is helping them think about, well, what, and it's important for people themselves to think about these things, because most of the time they don't. Not asked, or just don't get around to thinking about it, whatever. What are the ways, you know, what would it take to help them get there? Well, you know, it's one thing to have information. You know, information these days is easy. We can Google anything. We can know the answer in a split second. But stop for a moment and think, well, what would it take for me to get to the point where I could not just know that in my neocortex and be able to verbalize it in a sentence? But what would it take for me to go from where I am now to where I lived that? Do I need to study things more? Do I need to have some level of accountability with people? You know, do I need somebody to crack the whip occasionally? You know, just ask me, well, how's that going? Do I need to have deadlines? Do I need more education on certain things that I have no idea? I mean, part of it is thinking about what does it really take to make that journey from wanting something to being capable and committed and able to do that. And it's important because people, when they think about it, you know, different people need different things, but there are thematic things and usually some kind of a community, usually some human beings we work, accountability is a huge piece. And that will come out, you know, I mean, we know that. So, but even there, it's good for people to think through this. And again, what else? And then you have to ask people, and it's not just, it's really a resource question. And yes, and it's usually time and money, but, and it's not always just money. But another critical piece is do people have the time to invest in this? Or do they think they have the time? Or can you start a conversation about time and then help them think differently about the time that they have? Maybe, even though they have almost no time in their current schedule, but it's a little bit like, does anybody ever remember that Covey story about the lumberjack sawing down the trees? And he'd been sawing down the trees, and on the first day, you know, he did his 20 trees, and on the second day he did his 16 trees, and on the third day he did his 12 trees, and on the fourth day, you know, somebody said, you know, how come your numbers are decreasing? And his point was, well, my saw is not working like it was. And they said, well, why don't you stop and sharpen your saw? Well, I don't have time. I've got to cut down as many trees as I can. Sometimes we don't have time, but what we're spending our time on is not as good as it could be. If we would take the time to stop sawing down that tree with a blunt saw, sharpen the saw, we could go and get our other 12 trees that we were going to get that day done in, you know, another 2 hours worth of work, for instance. But there are things that we have to analyze and figure out, and there's no obvious way to say, and there are certain times when schedules are packed, and that's that. And there is time to analyze, well, yeah, that's what I'm doing, that's what I've got scheduled, but what actually is most important? And we do have to think about what is most important for how we live our life. And that's, they're the decisions, the judgments that we make, the leadership of our own lives. Because even if you never lead an organization, even if you never lead a team, the one thing only you can do is lead your life. Nobody else gets to do that. That's your job. And how you live your life is your work, your art, your craft, your skill, your science, your poetry, your music, whatever it might be. So, then at the end of these questions, and I'm just about to finish up for our lunch break. But before we do, we've got another couple of minutes. And then I just want to go these last couple of questions. Is to ask them, it really is a resource question. Do you have time? Do you have money? What are you prepared to do for that? Because it's important for people to think themselves, what am I prepared to do? I don't know. What is important to me? And it's not just a matter of what's important, is what's the reality of my life also at the time. But there, it's important for people to allow people to have those thoughts and to make have those considerations. And then at the end of this, then, you know, this was put here, and I made this as part of an Ifanin experience. This actually, nobody else on this call experienced this, but Ifani must remember all of these questions, even if he doesn't remember them all. Essentially, there's an ask at the end of it to say, you know, if you are, you know, if whatever it is you're doing, you have some kind of a call to action if you want. You don't have to. So, for example, Grace could say, you know, if we do have our next internship program, or if we were going to invite some of our past interns back, would you be willing to give a testimonial of what the experience was like? Would you have an ask? And the ask of them should be something that, yes, helps contribute to your larger work, and also allows them to consolidate or to up-level their own understanding of their experience. And sometimes when we go through something, it's not until we do some wrap-up at the end, some review and analysis, and understand what that means and has meant to my life, when we do our meaning-making component. And sometimes we need to be encouraged to do that, or given the space to do that. Sometimes experiences we have in our lives, you know, it won't let us go until we do that. And other times we're so busy moving on that we don't get the full value out of those experiences. And it's not until we do reflect on, think about, oh, how that did help us move from there to there, that then we can, A, feel an accomplishment. We can see how that's contributed, and we can then see going forward what that means for us in our life. So that is a valuable, what you are doing for a person through this whole process is actually a very powerful, valuable experience for them, as well as you gathering that information for your project or program. So you can go into these kinds of interviews with people with full confidence, I believe, that people will have a meaningful time with you that they value, as well as you gaining and gleaning information. So when you ask person for time to interview them, for your research, for your market research, for your stakeholder research, for your whatever it is, you can feel confident that time, and you can get all of this done in 30 minutes, sometimes 45 minutes. Well, you know, for Ifani, he moved on into a whole nother phase of activity, you know, by the end of that meeting. But that half hour to 45 minutes that it usually takes, 20 minutes, it can even take 20 minutes with some people, you can know that it is just as valuable for them as it is for you. So I'm going to finish up this section And so what we've done here is really we've gone over the co-creating, the stakeholder drivers. We're looking at the nitty-gritties of understanding and getting our hands and minds and hearts around the stakeholder journey that is such a unique and compelling and important component of social change that is very unique to, and I haven't even gone over other stuff, but I'll pull this together later on. But in the meantime, I'm going to give you a break. Go on off and get your lunch. You've got half an hour. We'll come back. We've got Chaplain Marilyn Morris coming in at 11:30, my time, whatever time it is, 30 in wherever it is that you guys are. In half an hour, we'll see you back then. And I look forward to handing off to introduce.